Good morning. Good to see all of you this week. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving together. If you've got a Bible with you, let's go to the book of Psalms, the collection of Psalms. We're going to be in Psalm 29 today. Psalm 29, if you do not have a Bible with you, there are Bibles that you could grab out of the chair rack in front of you. And if my memory serves me correctly, and it often does not, but it does, we're on page 461 of the Bibles that are in the chair rack. If you are not familiar with where to find things in the Bible, we are always glad when we have people with us who are not familiar with where to find things in the Bible, because we get to be a part in introducing you to the Bible and getting you familiar with the Bible. And if you don't own one, but you would like to take that one home, feel free. We would be glad for you to take that. We will restock. We want everybody to have a copy of God's Word. Before we start today, we are going to say goodbye to someone. Wanted to let you know that Gretchen Mahan is going to be moving this week, I believe. This is her last Sunday. And she is going to be moving up to Savannah. She's going to be living right now, I think, with her sister and her brother-in-law. And so Gretchen has actually been at the church longer than I've been at the church. She's been at the church her entire life, but she is now going to be moving up to Savannah. So if you see Gretchen today, I am scanning, but the lights are in my eyes, and so I can't. Oh, you're literally right there. Hi, Gretchen. So Gretchen is here today, so make sure you say goodbye to Gretchen. Wish her well. Savannah's not very far, so we'll be able to see her often, but we want to wish her well in this new step that she is going to be taking in her life. All right, Psalm 29 is where we are going to be spending our time this morning. Want to try to get you to go back in your mind and remember a time where you saw a storm rolling in. Take a second. Try to remember the last time you saw a storm approaching on the horizon. Something's probably coming to your mind. A lot of times, storms come as soon as we unpack all of our stuff at the beach. We get it all there and unpack it, and the storm shows up. But think in your own mind about a time when you have seen a storm rolling in. And as you're thinking about that, you're picturing that time, what did it feel like? What did you sense when that storm was coming in? I want you to feel like you were there. Maybe you felt the temperature drop dramatically as you start to feel the cool air come in. Maybe you start to feel the wind pick up and start to swirl around you. Maybe you're looking at the horizon and you're seeing that there are these dark clouds that are getting closer and closer, and you're wondering if they're moving your direction. Maybe eventually you hear the clap of thunder and you see lightning starting to spiderweb through the sky. You can feel a storm in your body. It is an awe-inspiring thing, especially when you get to see it move closer and closer and closer until the moment it unleashes its fury on you. A storm in the horizon has inspired many a poet throughout the centuries to pick up their pen and write. Emily Dickinson is one such poet. I'll read you three stanzas of a poem she wrote as she observed a storm. She says, "The wind begun to rock the grass with threatening tunes and low. He threw a menace at the earth, a menace at the sky. The leaves unhooked themselves from trees and started all abroad. The dust did scoop itself like hands and threw away the road. The wagons quickened on the streets. The thunder hurried slow. The lightning showed a yellow beak and then a livid claw. Poets have been inspired by storms to find ways to describe those storms to us, to personify those storms to us, to describe them in terms of the animal world. And Emily Dickinson in this poem goes on to say that the animals and the people run for cover, and as this storm comes in, the skies unleash, and yet she notes at the end of the poem that somehow her father's house is spared, even though a tree nearby is, in her words, quartered. It is knocked down and split into several pieces. The psalm we're going to be looking at this morning, which is attributed to King David, uses the imagery of a storm to inspire awe in us, which is why I wanted you to actually feel the storm. I wanted you to go back into your own experience to what the air felt like and smelled like and what it felt like to have the wind whip around you and what it feels like to see the skies unleash water on top of you, for the streets to flood. The imagery of a storm is used in this psalm to inspire awe in us and to move us toward worship. And so what I'd like to do is just work through this psalm. We've already read it as our call to worship today. But I'd like us to just work through this psalm. I'd like us to see it in three parts and then just reflect on it at the end. The first stanza, if you will, is found in verses 1 and 2. And in verses 1 and 2, this first stanza, we see in the first place the glory of the Lord. Verse 1 says, "Ascribe to the Lord, O heavenly beings, ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. Ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. Worship the Lord in the splendor of holiness." What I find interesting right out the gate as we read this psalm is that you can see that it's not addressed to us. Look at who it's addressed to. It begins, "Ascribe to the Lord, O heavenly beings." And what I believe the author of the psalm is trying to do with us immediately is to try to make us feel like we are a part of a world that's bigger than ours. So many times we get caught up in our own things, the things that we have going on in our world. We put ourselves at the center of our world, and sometimes we forget that there's something much bigger out there, that there are heavenly, angelic beings who are watchers of all of this and participants in all of this, themselves created by God. And so this invitation is an invitation to see ourselves as a part of something much greater, a spiritual world that we are often unaware of but is always there. These heavenly beings are being called to ascribe to the Lord glory and strength. To ascribe something to someone is to give them the credit for something. It is a call to worship. The heavenly beings and us who are reading this psalm are called to ascribe or credit to the Lord glory and strength, to give him his due. His name deserves glory, and it should draw us into worshiping the Lord, and the words that he uses, in the splendor of his holiness. There are things in our world that are filled with splendor. One of the things that you can go and visit still to this day is a palace that was built in the 1600s. It is the Palace of Versailles. If you were to look up the word splendor in your English dictionary, it might have a picture of the Palace of Versailles in it. Every inch of that palace is filled with splendor. The furniture that is in it is handcrafted and covered with gold. There is artwork on the walls. The ceilings are painted in these elaborate frescoes. There is the hall of mirrors that you can walk down. There are these windows that look out into the gardens that are perfectly manicured with gravel and fountains. And it is a magnificent thing to see. It is a palace that is adorned in splendor. And this psalm calls us to recognize that God is adorned. He wears splendor as a garment. And that splendor is his holiness, his uniqueness, the fact that he is set apart from everything and everyone else. He stands alone, unique in his glory, and we ought to give him the credit due his name for that. Ascribe to the Lord, humanity and heavenly beings and all creation, ascribe to the Lord the glory due his name. And then we see in verses 3 through 9, the voice of the Lord. We've seen the glory of the Lord in the first couple of verses, but now we hear the voice of the Lord in verses 3 to 9. This phrase, voice of the Lord, you might notice this, you could even underline it or highlight it in some way, is used 7 times in this span of verses. 7 times the voice of the Lord is mentioned. So if we're asking the question, how specifically is the glory of the Lord displayed in this psalm? It is through his voice. And David poetically describes the voice of the Lord in terms of a storm. Look with me, if you will, at verses 3 and 4. Let's just look at some of the imagery here. In verse 3, it says, "The voice of the Lord is over the waters. The God of glory thunders. The Lord over many waters. The voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty." This idea of the voice of the Lord being over the waters might remind us of the opening chapters of the book of Genesis, when the Spirit of the Lord hovers over the waters and it takes this chaos of waters and it moves them to one side and to another and creates the boundaries for the water and the land. The passage also tells us that the God of glory thunders. I recently had the opportunity to ride my bike across Florida with some friends, and on the second day of our trip across Florida, we were trying to get ahead of a storm, but we had an unplanned stop because one of our members of our riding group couldn't navigate a curb. And as he lay there bleeding, the rest of us waiting, the storm that we had seen coming was getting closer and closer. And as we were sitting there talking, taking a break, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, this huge thunder, just this booming sound startles all of us. And you've all had that experience before, right? You can feel the coldness of the air. It was warm, now it's cold, so we know that something like that's possible. The sky is getting a little bit darker, but it still takes us by surprise, doesn't it? When that thunder booms, we jump. Thunder is what sends children, small children, running to their parents' room in the middle of the night. Thunder is what sends people outside running for cover. Thunder is what sends people who are at the beach running for the car. And that's what God's voice sounds like. Every one of us in here has heard the voice of God audibly. It sounds like thunder. The Bible tells us again and again and again. we've been studying the book of John together, and you might remember in John chapter 12, Jesus cries out and asks for God the Father's name to be glorified, and God says, I have glorified it, and I will glorify it again. And what do the people are standing around hear? They said it sounded like thunder. Job hears God's voice, and it sounds like thunder. Thunder displays the Lord's power and his majesty. The psalm goes on in verse 5. The voice of the Lord breaks the cedars. The Lord breaks the cedars of Lebanon. He makes Lebanon to skip like a calf and Sirion like a young wild ox. We know that sound has the power to break things. You may have been in your house when a storm has been coming and a thunderclap is so loud that it rattles the windows of your house. I was playing disc golf in this park in Springfield downtown. And while it was there, there was not a cloud in the sky or anything like that, but there was some kind of explosion. And all of us who were in the park were startled by this explosion. I still, to this day, even though I was trying to figure it out, don't know what kind of explosion it was. But this explosion was so loud that there was a tree in the park, and the tree just fell over. I actually thought someone had hit the tree and there had been some kind of explosion from that. But whatever that sound was, that tree just broke in half and fell. And here David, as he is seeing this storm rolling in on the horizon, he imagines the thundering voice of the Lord just snapping trees in half. Lebanon and Syrian could be multiple things. Some people think that they refer to nations. They could also refer to mountains, which I think is perhaps more likely. If there's one thing that can't be moved, it's a mountain, right? Jesus speaks about the hardest thing to move takes faith. It takes faith to move mountains. There's just one thing that we can't remove from the horizon, and that's mountains. And yet the Bible also tells us that God's voice is able to make mountains tremble. His voice is able to make the mountains quake. He is able to shake them. He can make them skip like a young calf. And of course, no storm is complete without lightning flashing in the sky. And so we see that in verses 7 and 8. The voice of the Lord flashes forth flames of fire. The voice of the Lord shakes the wilderness. The Lord shakes the wilderness of Kadesh. So now we see the Lord's voice like lightning. And once again, you have experienced lightning. We have been in awe of lightning as we see these magnificent lightning strikes around us. You've been outside at night and you have seen lightning burst through the sky, and just for a moment, it's like daytime. It's magnificent. Photographers try to capture the magnificence of lightning in a frame. And the voice of the Lord is, the psalmist is telling us, is like that. Just as his voice shakes the mountains, it shakes the wilderness, the desert too. In fact, it shakes all of creation. Look with me, if you will, at verse 9. It says, the voice of the Lord makes the deer give birth and strips the forest bare, and in his temple all cry glory. The Hebrew word there, because the psalm was originally written in Hebrew, the Hebrew word for give birth can simply mean tremble or shake. So David is seeing the animals tremble and shake as the storm rolls in. And the voice of the Lord strips the forests bare. Now we're bringing the imagery of wind in with the storm. Remember that poem that we read from Emily Dickinson at the beginning, "The leaves unhook themselves from trees"? Most of us have been through a succession of hurricanes to one degree or another. And what happens after a hurricane comes through? There's debris everywhere. There are leaves everywhere. There are leaves at the bottom of your pool. There are leaves clogging up the storm drain on your street. There are leaves in your driveway. There are leaves that have to be raked off of your lawn and blown off of your driveways. It leaves a mess just at the force of the wind that is whipping through the trees. And David says God's voice is like that. As we step back from the magnificent display of the power of the storm, as the skies release their water and thunder and trees snap in two and mountains and wilderness and wildlife all quake, one of the things that it ought to elicit from us is worship. What originally attracted me to this psalm, as I was just reading through it in my own Bible reading plan, is that phrase that's found in verse 9. After going through all of these things about a storm and about telling us the effects of the storm, there is this subtle call to worship where David says, "And everyone in his temple all cry glory." When was the last time that you gasped in awe? When was the last time that something you saw just took your breath away? Sometimes we're so busy that if we were to try to go back in our minds, we can't even remember the last time that happened. Our heads are down. Our earbuds are in. We're getting from point A to point B so that we can get the next thing done. When all around us, God is speaking. He is speaking in the sky, and he is speaking in the storm, and he is speaking in the mountains, and he is speaking in all of the universe. And sometimes we ought to just step back and say, glory. Can you believe the magnificence of it all? And when you really step into that magnificence, when you feel that magnificence in your bones, when your soul is drawn to awe in such a way that you audibly gasp, we feel small, don't we? Not small in the sense that we are belittled, but small in our place. When was the last time you felt small? In this grand universe and all the things that fill it, you and I and our little lives that are like a wisp of smoke that's gone. It's the presence of a storm that reminds us how small we really are. You see, you and I are at the mercy of a storm. The news can tell us that the storm is coming. The news can send that hunter out into the storm and make the reporters stand in 60-mile-an-hour winds to show us how bad it is. We can see that hurricane being tracked by the radar and get notifications on it. But you know one thing we never do? We never go on the offense. When it comes to an approaching storm, the only thing that you can do is play defense. The only thing that you can do is run for cover. The only thing you can do is put sandbags around the doors. You and I, at the end of the day, are entirely at the mercy of the storm. Because it is big. And we are small. And that brings us to the third piece of this psalm. We have seen the glory of the Lord in verses 1 and 2. We've seen the voice of the Lord in verses 3 through 9. But now I want us to see the rule of the Lord in verse 10. In verse 10, the Bible says, "The Lord sits enthroned over the flood." The Lord sits enthroned as king forever. David slips one more piece of storm imagery into the psalm here by introducing the idea of a flood. We all know about devastating floods. Some of us have experienced the devastation of floods. But whether you have experienced the devastation of a flood or not, we know how devastating they can be. We've seen even earlier this year a flash flood in Texas whip through the lowlands and take the lives of numerous young people at a camp. You can't outrun a flash flood. And the power of a flash flood is so great that it sweeps buses and buildings as if they were toys. There is nothing that can hold back the power of that flood as it rushes through, destroying everything in its path. Now think about this for a moment. When a storm comes, where are we in relation to it? We are under it. It happens on us. But that is not the case with God. Because verse 10 of this psalm tells us that the Lord sits enthroned where? Over the flood. Do you see what this psalm is trying to do for us? What it's trying to do is give us a sense of our own smallness and give us an expanded sense of God's bigness, his greatness. I am small and he is big. I am under the storm. He sits over the storm. And not only is he over the storm, but he is enthroned over the storm. His throne, his place of rule is over the storm. It does his bidding. So if I could summarize the thought of the psalm for you in one lengthy sentence, I would do it this way. What does this psalm do? It says, we are called to worship the glory of the Lord as it is displayed in the voice of the Lord, revealing the rule of the Lord. Now, you may have noticed that there is one more verse left in this psalm. It's verse 11. And here's how David concludes. Okay, we are now in a place where we feel small and God feels big. And so he chooses to conclude this way. May the Lord give strength to his people. May the Lord bless his people with peace. We don't like to feel small, do we? I don't. I like to feel like I can handle life. I wake up many days fooling myself once again that I somehow have control over my life. That I've done enough advanced planning to keep negative outcomes at bay and produce the positive outcomes that I want. I want to be in a position that no matter comes what my way, I can overcome it by me. I will have the resourcefulness. I will have the resources. I will have the mental well-being to make sure that I can tackle whatever life throws at me. And many of us are tired because we keep trying to rise up and handle life our own, be big enough. And then something comes your way that shows you that you can't be big enough to control your life. You can't be big enough to prevent some of the negative things that happen to you. There are some things that are difficult to recover from. So when we experience smallness, particularly in this area of a storm, we can feel two things that make us uncomfortable. The first thing we can feel is our own weakness. You can do everything you can to prepare, but at the end of the day, you're at the mercy of the storm. And what this feeling of weakness is intended to help us do is rather than rise up and overcome our weakness, we are to be aware of the weakness, aware of our smallness, and then we are to appeal to the Lord for strength. Because the blessing of the Lord is that this strength that it is displayed in a voice that sounds like thunder and in lightning that flashes through the sky and wind that can rip the leaves off of the trees and flooding that comes from the waters that unleash, this same strength of this God who is over the waters can be given to his people. May the Lord give you his strength. May the power of the storm be exercised for you. Lord, we are small. We are weak. You are great. Give us your strength. Another thing that we feel when we feel our smallness in a storm is our own anxieties. We live with so many anxieties. There are so many things to worry about, aren't there? So many things to worry about. And we worry about them all. The fact that I even mention this immediately draws to your mind your own anxieties. The things that you thought about perhaps as you went to sleep last night. The things that were on your mind as you awoke this morning. And these anxieties can make us distressed and in turmoil. We are like the disciples who were with Jesus when they were in the boat in the midst of the storm, and there's this storm crashing all around them. I mean, they could have written this psalm based on the storm that they are experiencing. And what is Jesus doing? He's asleep. He is unperturbed by the storm. And you can imagine them looking at him, and we try to have fun with the Bible sometimes and not read it in a boring way. That's one of the things we're committed to. And we're imagining the disciples in the boat. Can you imagine the conversation? Like, how is he sleeping through this? And their awe that he's somehow able to sleep through this storm turns to annoyance because they finally get him up. And what do they say? Hey, don't you care that we're dying out here? And what does Jesus do? Jesus, in that moment, shows his disciples that storms don't happen to him. He happens to storms. They may be under the storm, but he is over the storm. And with three words, he turns the storm off by uttering a word of what? Peace. Peace. Be still. Might that make you gasp? Glory? It did for them. Who is this man that even the wind and the waves obey him? He's over it. When we feel our own anxieties, those often take us to a place of guilt. But couldn't they take us to a place of trust? Couldn't your anxieties that you battle each day, rather than running from them, could you not embrace them as a reminder to you of your weakness, of your smallness, and then could they not take you and trust to Christ, and could you not say, may the Lord bless me with peace? May not the Savior who can rebuke the storm and click it off, may I not run to him for peace? We resist the feeling of our own smallness because it reminds us of our powerlessness. But every storm that comes is a reminder to stop and listen to the voice of the Lord. To hear him speak and then gasp. We're going to share the Lord's Supper together now. And as we do that, we are reminded that no storm is as great a threat to you as your sin. My sin. We are powerless against it. And we would like sometimes, this has been a theme of the worship guide that hopefully you read together with your family last night and of our reading this morning. We don't want to feel powerless against our sin, and so we put together the good, little good that we can scrape and say, is this enough? Is this enough to make you love me? Is this enough for you to be happy with me, Lord? The Bible tells us this encouraging word in Romans 5, 6 to 8. For while we were still weak, at the right time, at just the right time, Christ died for the ungodly. For one will scarcely die for a righteous person, though perhaps for a good person one would dare even to die. But God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. What you and I need to be desperately need to be reminded of this morning is that though we were dead in our trespasses and sins, though we were running from God instead of to God, He has reached down to us in mercy because of His great love. In fact, He has showed His love, He has proven His love for you, is that even when you were running away from Him, He was running after you. And even though you were in love with your sin, He gave His Son to die for you. And though we are weak, Jesus uses His strength and His power to rescue us from our sin. Because of His shed blood, we are saved. The storm is over. And this ought to give us great peace. The other encouraging thought I want to give you is from verse 10 of Romans 5. It says, "For if while we were enemies, we were reconciled to God by the death of His Son, much more now that we are reconciled, shall we be saved by His life." If God chased you down and showed you grace when you were His enemy, how much more then is He chasing you now as His friend? Jesus has done the work to make sure that you are reconciled to God, and His life intercedes for you so that this relationship, this connection with God is maintained by the indestructible life of the Son. So we have the gifts of God's strength and peace as shown to us this morning.